Welcome to the Guitar Channel. I am super happy to welcome you a new interview. I am on the other side of the Zoom connection with the one and only Papa Chubby right from New York City. Papa, how are you doing tonight? Comment ça va?
Ça va bien, ça va très bien. I'll tell you why. You want to know why I'm très bien? Because this Friday, I'm going to get my first vaccination.
Oh, right. Excellent. That's a one step in the good direction. That's cool.
Oh, man. It's finally starting to happen. The winter is almost over.
Yeah.
And I have great optimism.
Mm-hmm.
Not right away, but it's going to happen for us, man. We're going to get back to music and back to life.
So we're going to talk in a moment about that great album you are going to release at the end of March. So more on that in a second. But tell me, what is the impact of the pandemic on your life as a working musician? Because you used to work and to be all over the world playing all the time. So how was the last 12 months or so for you?
Very difficult.
Yeah.
Honestly, very difficult. Very challenging in many ways. I did a few gigs, but they were like outdoor gigs
mm-hmm.
when it was warm, but only a few. I think in the last year, I've done five shows.
Okay. Instead of your usual like 200 or something like that?
200,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It, you know, out of every storm comes growth. So I've had the opportunity to really revisit my guitar playing, revisit great music, revisit my studio. And luckily, that record came out of it. It came out of the pain and anxiety and angst and love and fear and hope and desperation. And the biggest part of it was the public. The public was still there, thanks to social media, thanks, you know, to live streams. It was, you know, I could keep in touch with people, and it sustained me. Just like playing live sustains me, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And so how did you adapt to this situation of being at home all the time? I guess you record this, but anything else you change on your life?
My dogs are very happy.
Okay. That's good.
You know, look, I was on the road for 30 years, man. 30 years without a break. That's very difficult on the body, on the mind, on the spirit. So in a way, it enabled me to get fit, start to do some more martial arts, start to try and figure out my head and where I want to go in the future. And it made me, if the one thing the pandemic has done and should do for everybody, it makes you reassess your priorities.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It makes you realize what's important and what's not important. And what's important, there's only one thing that's important, my friend. It's what was important before, and that is love. The love we have for each other, the love for music. And really, it made me realize the music is more important than ever
mm-hmm.
because it's really what sustained me and so many people.
And so you just mentioned that you were focusing even more on your guitar playing. So what did you work on specifically on your guitar playing?
Well, I revisited a lot of music
okay.
that I learned in the past. I've had a lot of opportunities to do a lot of session work.
Okay.
While I'm home, because I have the studio. One thing, I started working with a company in New York called Tribeca Music that records classic rock songs. So I had the opportunity to pick what songs I wanted to play, and the gentleman would get the best musicians, you know, like Joe Walsh's rhythm section and the bass player from Lynyrd Skynyrd, and just like great players, record the tracks, send me the tracks, and I put the guitar and vocals on them.
Nice.
So I did a Led Zeppelin song. I did What Is and What Should Never Be, you know? And if I say to you tomorrow, take my hand, child, come with me. You know,
nice.
That, I did a cover of Two Rolling Stone by Robin Trower. And we just finished a cover, and this is great because you may know from my DVD and record from Le Plan in
mm-hmm.
Paris,
yeah.
I had my friend Steve Holly playing drums, who played with Wings, Joe Cocker, and for the last 25 years, he's been in Ian Hunter's band. So Steve and I decided we would call Ian up, who's now 82 years old, Semi retired and say, Ian, would it be okay if we covered Once Bitten, Twice Shy?
Oh, so yeah, we just nice.
We just finished this. And everybody thinks that song is by, like, that metal band that did
yeah,
it. They don't even know it.
White Shark or something like that, yeah?
Yeah, some
I
shit
remember
like that.
That. But, yeah, I thought it was Ian... from them, yes.
No. Well, the time's getting hard for you, little girl. I mean, you know, so that's been a lot of fun doing those things and playing on sessions. And in all honesty, being this is my only outlet, I've been recording a song a day and
oh, wow.
working
okay.
on different styles and working on different instruments. I've been working on my harmonica playing. I've really been working on my drums. Because I couldn't have musicians in the studio, I played all the instruments on the record.
Yeah, that's good.
Which you might think is an ego thing, but it's not. If I had the opportunity, I would have called Steve Holly. I would have called some other people, Keith Christopher and people like that. But I didn't. You know, mm-hmm. you couldn't do it. So you were left to your own resources. And if, you know, being the kind of person I am, I wanted to do it better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I still do. I still want to learn how to play this thing. I still don't know how to play it.
Mm-hmm. Before we talk about Tinfoil Hat, you have to tell me about when you met Thierry Labrouze from Celt Amplification, and I know that now you play a Mostro amplifier, so tell me about this.
How I met Thierry
yeah.
was through a good friend, Ludo.
Yeah, Ludo Quegras, yes. Mm-hmm.
Who I love, man, like a brother, man. He's the best guy in the world. And Ludo was interviewing me at Hotel Le Général
yeah.
in Paris.
I remember,
and
yeah.
Mm-hmm. He said, listen, I want you to meet this guy. So Terry came down, and he brought an amplifier, and the staff at the hotel was very nice. They said, play it in the lobby as loud as you want. I was like, really? They're like, yeah, we don't care.
You don't know You're me? Okay, are you sure? Yeah.
They were like, it's cool. You're Papa Chubby. It's fine. Yeah. I was like, great, man. I mean, I've been staying there for 25 years, you know?
Okay.
I'm like,
yeah, yeah.
It's like, so but they were very cool. Terry and I hit it off mm-hmm. like that, and he allowed me to have the amplifier. I took it out on one tour, and okay. then I haven't been back. Mm-hmm. It's sitting in my tour manager's house in Paris, my good friend and my brother for 25 years, Amar Ramadan,
mm-hmm.
and he has it along with my other guitar. And I hope to see it soon. I hope to visit my amplifier and my friends.
So, but at the time, you were not especially looking for or shopping for an amplifier. So what did you enjoy
I'll tell you what I enjoyed.
Yeah.
My live rig, I use a Fender Twin mm-hmm. for the clarity and volume. And then I like a Marshall JCM 900. Right? Older Marshall. The reason I like the JCM 900 is because it's a lot like a JMP. It's like a lot like the original Marshalls, right? But the Marshalls you get from rental companies are hit or miss. You never know what you're going to
yeah.
get.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're horrible. I plugged in this amp and I was like, this has all the characteristics of a Marshall, all the characteristics of a Hi-Watt, all the characteristics of a Mesa Boogie, tons of tone control, and I fell in love with it. And he said, I make you a gift.
Nice.
And I was like, that's amazing, man. So now that's going to be my rig. Plus, it has red Tolex. It's
yes,
so
red is good,
sexy.
Right? Yeah.
So sexy, man, so sexy.
I remember when Thierry told me the story about the encounter at Hotel General, and he was scared because you were playing so loud in the lobby that he was sure that, I don't know, the manager would come down and say, wow, what the hell is that? Stop everything. But everybody was happy, and it was a good story in the end. So that's good. Excellent.
They couldn't have been cooler. It was great, man.
Mm. All right, so let's talk about Tinfoil Hat. So it was basically a pandemic record. Everything was recorded or was composed during the pandemic?
It started with one song. After I here's the situation. I got married on February 14th of 2020.
Wow, congratulations.
On February 19th, I flew to Berlin to do a private show. On February 21st, I returned home.
Mm-hmm.
On February 22nd, I got in the bus and drove to the southeast of America, right when the pandemic was breaking. And we were listening to the news and we were terrified, but we weren't going to cancel shows. And we made it all the way down from New York to Key West, mm-hmm. the most southern tip of the United States of Florida. And all of a sudden, all hell broke loose.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to drive home. We canceled two shows. And by the time we got home, it was like the end of the world. It really felt like the world was ending. Nobody knew what was going on. We had Donald Trump as president, which was the worst thing that could have ever happened to really? America. Yeah. Well, you know, it's sad because both here and in your country, there are some people who don't believe that. They believe that he was wonderful, you know?
Yeah.
But they also liked Hitler and Stalin and, you know,
very true.
Those yeah. cats. So what are you going to do, bro? Anyway, I was depressed. I was depressed and I couldn't do anything. I couldn't play. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to transition, man. I was literally falling apart emotionally. And I picked up the guitar and I got a little secret I want to tell you. Are you feeling afraid? Do you think we'll get through? Are you all alone? And I wrote the song, Can I Call You My Friends, in my bedroom. And I went downstairs, and it lit me up. And I was like, I have to record this. And I recorded it right away, because I have my studio.
Mm-hmm.
And I put the video, I made a video, and I put it right up on social media. And the title of the song is, Can I Call You My Friends?
Yeah.
Question mark.
Mm-hmm.
And within an hour, 10,000 people said yes. And I want to cry right now, man. I'm very emotional about this. Because what that meant to me was that all these people needed to hear what I had to say, and I needed to hear what they had to say. And that, my friend, is the essence of what we do. That's the only reason to do it. Not to be a rock star, not to fuck women or men or whatever, or not to make money. The reason is that we need to come together and we need to lift our souls. And it did that in that moment. And I realized the power of music, and then I realized, you know what? I can comment on all this shit that's going on. All this horrible shit that's going on. You know, watching the news every day was horrible. It was just the most you know, I'm used to never watch. I never watch the news. All of a sudden, I'm watching the news 10 hours a day, man. Because because things are changing so quickly, I'm afraid. And besides the pandemic, we had all the racial injustice and all the violence going on and black people being killed. And it just, it made me angry, man. And, you know, you got to realize I'm a child of the 60s, right? And I realized the cycle is repeating itself, but it's worse.
Yeah.
But now we're on the other side of it.
That's good. And so that was the initial inspiration that got you started to write all the song. And I have to agree that Can I Call You My Friends is one of the very emotional song on the record. There is also No Justice, No Peace, which is a very powerful song. So tell us about that.
George Floyd, man.
Yeah.
Okay. George Floyd being murdered.
Mm.
On you know, Gil Scott-Heron said, the revolution will not be televised. You remember that? You know who Gil Scott-Heron was?
Mm-hmm.
He was a political spokesman, songwriter, soul jazz singer. And he wrote a song called The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. He was wrong. The revolution was televised. And you saw these police officers. Listen, man, this has been happening since ever I can remember. When I was a kid, this used to happen, but nobody had video cameras. But to watch this man being murdered for nothing made me so enraged and so angry. And I know what's happening in France, too. I know people of color are not looked upon in the same way. People of different ethnicities. And it has to stop. And anybody who doesn't have rage about this, anybody who doesn't speak out, anybody who says, oh, it's okay, all lives matter, I have no time for you, man. I don't want to know you. I'm done. You know, it's time to take a stand. And that's what this record is. You have to take a stand. There are too many artists making vague statements because they're afraid about hurting their career.
Mm-hmm.
With this record, I probably destroyed my career in America.
You think
I don't
so?
Care.
Yeah. Really?
Half of it. Half
of it. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't care.
Mm.
I really don't care because it's what I'm saying is more important than if some festival in Alabama is going to book me, you know? Because, I mean, what I'm going to say is very disturbing. The blues business is the music of African people. Mm-hmm. The blues is music of African people, of black people. And the business is run primarily by white older men, white promoters, white managers, white record companies, white bookers. I'm not saying there aren't some awesome, excellent people. There are. But it's still, the power structure is uneven. And until that changes, until Bob Marley said it, man, until the philosophy that holds one race superior and another inferior is finally and permanently abandoned and discredited forever, everywhere, there's war. And that's what no justice, no peace is not a threat. It's an eventuality. If we don't have justice for all, we'll never have peace. If everybody is not treated the same and looked upon, until the color of a man's skin is no more important than the color of his eyes. Mm. So you know, I really think Marley was a prophet, man. I mean, I really do. I mean, you know, one of many, but, you know, rock and roll has given us many prophets and taken them away.
Yeah. Can you walk us, I don't know, through your composition process on one of these songs? There is a song called MB Song, which is a slow song on the album. Can you tell us what was the initial idea and how you evolved the song to what we have on the record now?
Two things. I love my wife.
That's good.
And I love her more than anything in the world. And life is difficult for everybody. So sometimes when you love somebody, you have to watch them suffer through things. You have to watch them suffer through difficult situations. My wife was losing her brother. Her brother was dying from cancer. I had nothing to offer her except my heart. And the best way I could do that is through music. And I wrote the song. The other thing, I really love Al Green, man. And I wanted to get that Al Green feel on the drums, that Al Jackson played drums with Al Green. So on this song, I really feel that I nailed it. I nailed the Al Green sound and the Al Jackson sound. And the song just came together. And to this day, it's one of my... I'll love this song forever.
Yeah, it's a nice chord progression. Do you usually start with a riff on the guitar or with a chord progression?
I started with the drum beat. I started with the drum beat and the accents. I was thinking... Ba-ba-bum, that's that real relaxed in the pocket feel. And then it all came together, man. Now, I'm a traditionalist, man. I love standard tunes and I love standard chord progressions. The reason why they're so standard is because they're beautiful. And they, when you hear that, when you hear, it makes you feel good. It makes you feel soft. And it's not me. It's the chords, man. I just borrowed them. I borrowed them from a million songs. I borrowed them from the air. And I'm lucky enough to be able to understand that they're there for everybody to use.
Mm-hmm. You have a beautiful tremolo guitar sound on that specific song. What did you use? What's the secret?
Fender 1965 Fender Princeton reverb amp with the tremolo on.
Wow.
And the guitar directly into it, recorded with an AEA 88 ribbon mic through an AEA ribbon mic pre.
Okay.
Directly onto Pro Tools, and then EQ'd with an API 550 EQ. And a distressor compressor.
The sound is really good. What about the guitar? Is that your trusty old Strat on that song, or what did you use?
I have to remember, man. You know, the thing is, I don't know if you can see the studio, but in this room, there's probably about 50 guitars.
Ooh,
and
nice.
Then in the other room, there's probably about another 100.
Okay.
So, but mostly, I revert back to this one, man. I always go back to this guitar because I love it, and it's my baby. But I have, there's a lot of guitars. I mean, I always have a Stratocaster, a Telecaster, two SGs, a Fender bass, and two acoustics out.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good place to start.
Yeah, definitely. Especially when you have the studio and everything, and all the gear, and all the also all the talent to be able to play all the instruments. And
I don't know about the talent, but I have the other stuff.
Well, definitely the result is very cool. So I have to say that.
Thank you, man.
And how was it to? Because usually you record your album with a band and everything. So
yeah,
what was different? Because this time you were playing everything by yourself. So there was there was no interaction with musician, no input. So how did you solve that strange problem?
I didn't really solve it. I approached it from the perspective of how I want, you know, whenever I make a record, I record all the demos by myself. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, some artists will just have an idea and bring it to the band, and then the band records it, and then at the end of the day, everybody says, I wrote the song, I wrote the song. Well, I don't want that. I wrote the song. I know what I want. I know how I want it played. My concept of drums is I appreciate acrobatic drummers. I think it's great to watch people with mad chops, but that's not what pays the bills, man. Mm-hmm. What pays the bills is groove, pocket. So I focused on that, man. And every house is built from the bottom. So usually, you know, my favorite example is Keith Richards and Steve Jordan. When they make a record, the two of them go into the studio, guitar and drums. No bass player, just guitar and drums. So the lock is always between rhythm guitar and drums. So I cut the drums to a click track, and I've gotten really good at playing with a click track. I got a great setup. I got an old Ludwig kit, all mic'd up perfectly. And once I get the right drum track, it's just about getting the right guitar sound and marry into that. And from there, you can build a mansion. You can build a chateau, man. Mm-hmm.
So you start with the drum track, then you add guitar, then the rest of the song, then you finish by what? Your voice and the guitar solos? Or
background vocals, guitar solos, percussion, whatever, man. Whatever the song calls for. The song, if you get out of the way, the song will tell you what to do.
Mm-hmm. What about other piece of gear? So you mentioned one amplifier, this guitar. Any interesting pedals or secrets, stone toys?
Oh, so many, man. I mean, there's just so... You know, I like to keep it simple, man. I really do, man. But I've been going back and forth. You know, I'll tell you what I have in here because you can't really see it too well. But if you look in the back,
yeah,
I have a 1959 Fender Tweed Twin. Right there.
Yeah, yeah, I see it, yeah.
Which is maybe the holy grail of amplifiers.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds amazing, but it's so loud.
Okay. Well, it's not a problem for you to be loud, right?
No, but for recording, you don't need volume.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You don't need a lot of volume for recording. You need tone.
No.
For live playing, you need volume. You want to move air, man. You want to get over the drums, which are very loud. You know, but for recording, you don't need volume. So... Excuse me, I keep my recording rig down to about three amplifiers. I use the 1965 Blackface Fender Princeton.
Mm-hmm.
I use a 1952 Fender Tweed Deluxe.
Okay.
Which is a lot like the Tweed Twin, except way lower power. And then there's a company, you may have heard of them, called Fuchs Audio.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Andy Fuchs is my amp guy. He does all my amps.
Okay.
He modded an old Deluxe I have into a Fuchs ODS, which is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It's 25 watts. It has channel switching. It's full of tone and life. It's a great recording amp, great for a small gig. So I take that out. As far as pedals go, man, I've been revisiting a couple of old pedals. Full tone makes a pedal. Now, I have a real Univibe, which is incredible, right? Any copy I've heard of a Univibe, any pedal that's supposed to emulate it, never gets close to the real thing. Not even close. Some of them are okay. Full Tone, when they first came out, made a pedal, a prototype of the Full Tone Univibe. And I had a friend who worked for the company. He gave it to me.
Ah, okay.
And I recently took it back out. And it's the closest thing to a real Univibe. The other pedal I've been using that I really love... I still use a Tube Screamer, a Maxon, because a Maxon is just like the original TS-808, same thing. I use the Robin Trower Overdrive by Full Tone, which I love. and I started using the plimsoll, the full-tone plimsoll pedal, mm-hmm. which is like a germanium fuzz with a two-stage boost, which I love for fuzz, man. It's great, man. And otherwise, it's all about the fingers, man. You know, tone comes from your fingers, man. Mm-hmm. And then getting a good sound, you got to know where to put the mic on the amp. And I've been doing it for a long time, man. It's not magic. It's not rocket science. People make this stuff seem way too difficult.
And do you record everything, I guess, straight to your computer, but you don't use any plugin or stuff like that for your guitar sound?
Not going in.
Okay.
Never. Okay. Never going in. Everything. I worked with Tom Dowd, one of the most famous record producers on Booty and the Beast. Tom Dowd taught me you keep the signal path going in, no EQs, very little compression.
Okay.
No processing. Mm-hmm. Everything goes in clear and straight because then every element has integrity. So afterwards, when you have all your elements and by themselves, you put them up and they sound good. You know, the whole concept of I'll fix it in the mix, mm-hmm. merde. Beaucoup de la merde.
Beaucoup de la merde. So, yes, excellent. I see that you have on your wall behind you Leslie West.
Bon ami.
Yeah, tell us about what was important about Leslie for you.
I'll tell you a funny story. Yesterday I did, and you know Fabrizio Grossi from Supersonic Blues Machine?
No. Okay.
You know the band, Supersonic Blues Machine?
Yeah.
Fabrizio is a bass player and a producer. That's his band.
Okay.
Anyway, he's doing a thing for the No Totten Blues Festival. So we did an interview, and he produced Leslie West's last record for Provogue. And we started talking about Leslie because I worked with Leslie a lot.
Okay.
And growing up,
okay.
when I was growing up, you got to realize Leslie was from Queens. He was from Forest Hills, Queens. I was from Flushing. Mm-hmm. Leslie was big fat guy, right? With a big afro. When I was 18, I was a big fat guy with a big afro. People used to say, Leslie West, man. So when I finally got introduced to Leslie, he was like, hey, how you doing? He was, Leslie wasn't, first of all, nobody will ever make the contribution he did. Mississippi Queen, mm-hmm. come on, man. And we were talking about, we said, people like Leslie and Jimmy, those guys didn't play the guitar. They played their soul.
Mm-hmm.
It was all soul, man. The way he's singing, he played, man. I got that poster because I played a gig with him at the Iridium in New York City about 5 years ago. You know, sadly, he had lost a leg to diabetes. He was in a wheelchair, but he still played and sang just like Leslie West, man. And I cherish that forever. On my wall are pictures of Leslie West signed, Hubert Sumlin, mm-hmm. who's my godfather, who's on the wall, and a local bluesman from Chicago named Cash McCall, who people don't know about, who was wrote some of the best songs in the blues, and a local harmonica player named Little Sammy Davis. These people were so important to me, man. So important to my development. And, you know, they live there for honor on the wall and for inspiration. And right behind me here, you can't see it, I have a portrait of Keith Richards. And I have a portrait, I have a record cover of Bo Diddley, Howlin' Wolf, and Muddy Waters.
Good company. Indeed.
And those are the fathers. Mm-hmm. So the fathers look over me, and these guys stand behind me, and they give me inspiration, and they give me the way to go, man.
That's good. Do you have any idea when it's going to be the next time you're going to be able to play on the road, or you have no visibility at the moment?
I have hopes and I have visibility.
Okay.
Should I share them?
Yes, please do.
Okay, but I don't know if it's going to happen. But right now, the Tour of Europe is booked for October 2021.
Wow, that's good news. Excellent.
Now we're hoping.
Mm-hmm.
We're hoping that everybody continues. I don't know how the vaccination's going in your country. I think not so well, right?
Well, it is kind of ramping up, but it is really,
yeah,
we are
same
really
here.
At the early stage at the moment, yes.
Here, it's just, this week, it went from here to here.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't get an appointment. All of a sudden, everything opened up.
Good, that's good.
So, and I think a lot of that is for because of our new president. You know, I mean, I think we got the right guy now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm very happy about finally America may be viewed as a good place again. That gave me great pain, man, because I traveled in Europe for 30 years. I never met a European who didn't like me because I wasn't American. I met people who didn't like the president, who hated George Bush, just like I did,
mm-hmm.
who hated Ronald Reagan, who hated Trump. But nobody ever said to me, American scum, fuck you. Never. Never. And not only that.
Because you are a scary guy. That's why.
Not why. Because, you know what? People in France loved American culture.
Indeed.
They loved American rock and roll.
Yes.
They loved, and they took it, people in England, people in Germany, too, and they made it their own. And then the world got smaller,
mm-hmm.
and the community became global, and everything became available to everybody. And all of a sudden, we had this, and I don't know any other terms, this Nazi in the frickin' White House who was taking us back 50 years, man. And for me, that was so painful. It was so painful, you know. I told my friends in Europe, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry this is happening, man. You know, and I know it's happening for you too on some level, man. And we yep. really have to, us, you know, whatever your beliefs are, we have to believe that there's no way through this except together. The world is too small now.
Yes, indeed.
That's the reason we have a vaccine now
mm-hmm.
in less than a year when it would have taken 10 years,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's a good lesson.
What are the projects you would like to work on for 2021?
I'll give you a big one. I'd like to go to a restaurant and eat lunch.
That's a good project, yes.
I'd like to play a concert for people. I'd like to hug my fans again. You got to realize, man, there are artists who never go near their fans. Their fans aren't allowed to touch them. If you want to see them, you have to pay 200 euro before mm-hmm. the show.
Yeah.
You know? I despise that. I think that's the lowest thing an artist can do. Me, I was out at the show every day before and after the show, selling merchandise, signing autographs, shaking people's hands, hugging people, man. I miss that. I got to know my fans in every country, in every city I went. I saw the same people who saw me 5, 10, 15 times. I knew their names. I knew their children. I watched their children grow. They were family to me. I missed that more than you could possibly imagine, man.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Can you maybe take us out with some guitar playing before we say goodbye?
Yeah, I can always do that. And a big fuck you!
Best conclusion ever. Papa Chubby, Papa, really, thank you very much for the time. I hope that next time we meet, it won't be through a camera and screen and everything. And I hope to see you back. So you say sometimes in October, do you have the date for your coming in Paris or France? You don't know yet?
I think L'Olympia is booked
Woo.
For October 11th, 2021.
Excellent. All right.
Everybody, burn a candle, whatever you do.
Yes, let's do that. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you very much for your time. Cheers.
For the price of a magazine, subscribe to The Guitar Channel to access the full videos.